In the morning, Gitmo Nation, thank you for joining me once again for Just Getting By with Sir Craig and Chemslave. Hello, Chemslave.
Hey, Craig.
All right, so let's get started with today's stories. So, President Obama hasn't been doing too well in the polls. He is wearing a little bit thin with the American people. And so much so that he is now at 52% disapproval in the latest Gallup tracking survey. Now, Andrew, I don't know if you follow polling numbers too closely. I get the impression you don't. But 52...
Most of them are bullshit.
That's true, but, you know... It's a good rule of thumb to just to take a look at. It certainly is not 100%, but it's a good benchmark of where the country is at currently in one snapshot of time. It has its uses, it has its disuses, but that being said, it is significant that President Obama is at 52% disapproval, because he is at 40% approval. He was down to 39% approval during one of the 3 days that they take into consideration for this survey. That is astounding.
Weren't Bush's job approval ratings also that low at certain points in his
in his second term, in the last years of his second term, that's normal. That's people made out that President Bush's approval ratings were in the crapper, and they were not good. He was down to about 36% approval. I mean, they were pretty bad. So I'm not saying that they were not bad, but and that was the last couple years of his presidency after Hurricane Katrina and after the Iraq War got really bad. And it was one thing after another. I mean, it's a miracle Bush didn't have 1% approval. I mean, that was a whole lot of FUD about that poll. But this is unusual because Obama was supposed to be this transformative, this compromise person who would reach across the aisle and work for consensus and unite the country. This man has been among the most divisive politicians we have ever seen. He, and the American people are really starting to see that too. His approval is just terrible. No president has won re-election with unemployment over 8%, and right now it's about 9.1%. And his approval ratings as well. No president has been re-elected, with disapproval over, what is it? Over 50%, and Obama's at 52% right now. So the trend is not with him. The force is not with him in this regard. So he's in trouble. So, do you have any comment on this?
Truthfully, I every time people say like, "Oh, jobs." Like, does the president have actual any say in the creation or loss of jobs? Even with them, like, saying, oh, jobs, 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 like, really, do they actually have that much control over if people get more jobs or less jobs?
Well, you see, the answer to that is no, the president has absolutely nothing to do with the jobs. And that's a controversial statement, but it's absolutely true. The president has nothing to do with the economy at all. That's one of the dark secrets of government. The presidency has little to no impact on the economy. The economy, especially when an economy is so big and ponderous like the United States' economy, it takes on a life of its own. And there's really not much that any one entity, be it the presidency or the legislature, can do to impact it. Now, specific policies can have gradual impacts on the economy. For instance, I would argue that the increased regulation that Obama has put in place has limited job creation and limited expansion in the private sector. But that didn't stop jobs from coming back in, you know, one day. I mean, that was a many, many, many month thing. And the truth is that if the economy was at a place where it could add a lot of jobs, it would. Regardless of the policies that any president would institute. Now, that being said, I don't know if you recall, but the last No Agenda show, I'm sorry, two No Agenda shows ago, John, you know what? No, this wasn't No Agenda. I confused myself. Now, this was, do you listen to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged?
I try to listen to it, because I'm not that, I don't invest into, in the stock market. Sometimes some of the things they, talk about in the second half of the show just, don't tickle my fancy, but I try to listen to it.
Well, I don't know if you listened to, the last show, or maybe the show before then, but John threw out this kind of thought question. Why doesn't the federal government reduce the corporate income tax down to nothing? Do you recall that conversation?
No, that's because, might be just because I missed that show.
That's possible. That'll do it. But he asked Horowitz, why does if America really wanted to create jobs, why doesn't it just cut the corporate interest rate down to nothing? Because then companies, he posits, companies would be flocking to the United States, and I absolutely agree with him. You know, when you think about China and the cost of labor in China, what do you automatically think of?
All our jobs going, all our manufacturing jobs going over there.
That's absolutely right. But when you, listen to me though, when you think of the cost of labor in China, what do you think of?
Very, very cheap.
That's exactly wrong. People think that. But the fact of the matter is, China has begun to institute enough labor regulations that it is becoming not as cheap as it once was to be in China. And with the shipping costs and, you know, just logistical concerns, for American companies to have based their manufacturing in China can be a very expensive ordeal. But the thing is, China doesn't charge a whole lot of taxing for its companies, especially companies that are not based in China. So basically, these companies are taxed in America, but they're getting these parts from China. But if you cut the corporate income tax down to nothing in America, that kind of makes up for the savings that, you know, these companies receive in China for labor. So there's really no benefit anymore to being in China. So why wouldn't you be in the United States? You see what I mean?
It makes sense.
Now that's
but
a very.
I don't see this happening.
No, they both said that. Horowitz said, "You know what? That's not a terrible idea, but it's never going to happen." And Dvorak was very quick to agree with him, and so do I. That would never, never fly. But still, it needs to. Things like that really do have impacts on the economy. And, for instance, the top 1% of wage earners in this country, the top 1%, Just take a guess how much they pay in comparison to the bottom 50%.
Percentage-wise from what they...
That's right.
From they make? Probably
yes.
Either... probably somewhat less.
I actually don't know what that means. Somewhat less.
Probably either a similar percentage or much like or a lower percentage. At least that's what I'm being led to believe by some sources.
The top 1% of wage earners in America pay more in terms of the total revenue that comes into the U.S. economy than the bottom 50% combined. The amount of money that the bottom 50% total put into the U.S. economy each year through personal income tax is the same as what the top 1% puts into the economy through tax. Think of
yes,
that.
But that is the bottom 50% only make so much money, and the top 1% make shitload of more money.
But we're talking about the bottom 50% of people, not of wages. Of people. So that means you're talking about 150 million people, and then you're talking about 1% of. What's 1% of 300 million people? Is that 3 million?
300?
300.
Yeah, 300,000. Wait. Stop asking me math questions.
Well, you're the math genius. I mean, I can't add 2%. Anyway, so you're taking 150 million people and comparing it to 1% of 300 million. God knows what that is. I don't know. But anyway, it's
3 million, I think.
3 million, yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it kind of does. So when you think of it that way, that is a gross disparity. And I'm not necessarily saying that they should be paying any less, the top 1%, but included in that top 1% are not people like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett. They are in that top 1%, but they're... Also, we're talking about people that make $250,000 a year, or $300,000, $500,000, $1 million, $5 million, $10 million a year. When you're in that bracket, yeah, on paper, it looks like you're making a lot of money. But oftentimes, you're putting that money back into a business, or back into investments, back into something that will end up creating jobs and creating... liquidity in the market.
Back into your save or your bank account on a Cayman Island somewhere.
You see, that is the classic liberal bullshit talking point. That is not how it works. Now, for people that have hundreds of millions and billions, yeah, okay, I'll grant you there are probably situations like that. But when you make maybe less than 10 million, between 250 and 10 million, you don't have enough money to put enough of it away in the Cayman Islands to make it worth your while. If you have that amount of money, that means you're just successful enough that you've got a nice business going, or you've got a nice something going, but you're not wealthy enough to just let it sit there and earn interest and live off that. And do you see what I mean? It's those people that are taxed through the nose that really... the liberals call them the wealthy, but they're really not wealthy. That included in that 10 million, non-liquid, assets like a job, like a business, real estate, things like that. Things that add value to the United States economy and add jobs. And if you keep taxing those people at a high rate of taxation, That's going to depress the job market. And then
I don't know. I've read an article on Bloomberg almost a year ago now, about Google saving tax money by doing something called like a Dutch sandwich a Dutch sandwich.
They what that is, and I'm not going to get the specifics totally right here. But what that is they have, like, some affiliate company in Ireland. Yeah, it's Ireland.
Yep.
And they get taxed in Ireland, and then they ship money to the Netherlands and then back to America. There's some revolving door for finances that way that allows them to bypass a certain level of taxation from the United States. And Google may do that, but the people that got in trouble for that were Apple. Apple does that. And Google may do that because Microsoft definitely does it. Many companies do that. That Dutch sandwich type thing. The sandwich is the Netherlands, Ireland, and the United States. That's the sandwich. That phenomena is very, very, very common in multinational corporations. So, I don't know enough about that to speak really intelligently on that, but that the fact that such a loophole exists tells you that there is a lot wrong with our tax code. So you know, there's a lot to be said about the U.S. economy. There's a lot that Congress and the presidency can do to try and impact the economy at some future date. But if the economy is shit, it's going to, in essence, stay shit until it takes itself out of the doldrums. Dvorak, and he has definitely talked about this on No Agenda, Dvorak is somebody who believes very strongly in the cycle theory of economics, where economies ebb and flow at different points, you know, in their history. They go up for a certain time, then they go down at a certain time, then they go back up. It's all a cycle. Like the late 1970s was a down point. The 80s was an up. The 80s and 90s was an up point. The 2000s starts the down point. It's going to be going back up again in the mid 20 teens. So, people like that believe very strongly that the world economy has a flow to it, has a cycle. And I tend to look at it that way as well. Because it's fairly obvious that whether a president or Congress's economic policy is one thing or another, if it's a liberal or conservative policy, it doesn't really matter. Anything that they do will be successful if it's around a time where the economy is going to be picking up steam. Like Reagan did the supply-side economic thing that George H.W. Bush called voodoo economics. And yet, Reagan presided over a very healthy economy in the mid to late 80s. Now, you can argue that Reagan helped foster that healthy economy, whereas his predecessor, Jimmy Carter, had one of the worst economies in the post-Depression history of the United States. Or you could argue that it was a cycle, and that Reagan was just lucky to be in office when the cycle was going up.
I think Dvorak would argue on that side.
Absolutely. That's what I just said. Absolutely. And I would tend to agree with him. Now, I do tend to look more favorably on conservative viewpoints than liberal viewpoints, only because conservative viewpoints usually, if they're truly conservative, mean less government intervention, which I think is the best thing in most cases. You can trace the housing collapse that we saw in 2007. You can trace that directly to a Bill Clinton-era initiative where Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac started to issue mortgages to lower-income families and minority households that could not necessarily afford them. And when the economy went south, these people were left with houses that they absolutely could not afford, with guarantees by the federal government that were no longer feasible. And the rug was pulled out from under them. So, you know, that's the type of stuff that you need to watch out for. But anyway, to answer your question, and I'm sorry it took so long, but to answer your question, no, there is very little, very, very little, that any one man or one institution can do to improve an economy overnight or even within a month or two. All right, so what do you want to talk about?
Well, it's that time again. Well, we find another some kid's stand being shut down.
Oh, my God.
This time it's not lemonade, though, so at least it's something new this time.
What is it?
A 12-year-old in Massachusetts set up a green tea stand with it, I'm guessing his dad, and who came back from Japan after the earthquake, and they set up a stand up on the side, somewhere off the side of the street. And I think and some dude in a brown shirt, some type of official, said, yeah, you have to shut down because you need a permit.
You know, it's funny that you should say that. A brown shirt came by and said, you can't do that. You need a permit. You know what? That's funny, right?
Nope. Oh, wait. Brown shirts.
Yes.
Nazis.
That's exactly right. And you know what they call the Massachusetts?
No.
The People's Republic of Massachusetts. I know we're mixing two different ideologies there. I know that. But still, I mean, they are known for having an activist, liberal, you know, in-your-face, you know, kind of, you know, almost communist view on things. And it's not surprising that Massachusetts would do that. Now, I read the article that you sent me about this, and it was telling that two different police forces are mentioned. Explain that.
First, sort of like the local police are mentioned, and they're like, yeah, that's they pretty much say, yeah, that's like, it's good, just go on. Then the state police, or what is said to be the state police, because later on it says they don't really know who the hell it was. It's like, it's under question if it was actually the state police, but they said, yeah, you have to shut down. So this is telling that it's like some type of like the locals, they see no problem with it, and the state police come in and are like, yeah, close down, since this is bad.
You see, in Massachusetts, they have a situation very much like Pennsylvania, very much like California. You see this all over the country, actually. Texas has the same phenomena, where one or a couple areas of the state are so populous that they end up controlling the state politics. They have enough people that they end up flooding the state legislature, and the influence they wield is disproportionate to the geographic area that they inhabit. So many times you'll have the rural and suburban communities that have a more traditional, a less invasive view of government and society. And then you'll have these cities that are much more liberal, much more progressive, and they will tend to be more interventionalist in people's daily lives. And you see that in state institutions where they are being dictated to by these progressives from various cities, and local people may be a bit more conservative. And you see that in Massachusetts. I have an uncle who lives in Massachusetts, and it's a very conservative state until you get to Boston. And the greater Boston area is one of the biggest urban areas in the United States, and it is overwhelmingly liberal. But then western Massachusetts is very conservative. But nobody knows that. Everybody thinks Massachusetts is a very liberal state because of the Boston metropolitan area. And you see that in California, too. Los Angeles and San Francisco are very very liberal. But then, once you get beyond those two cities, you find that California is a very conservative place. It's just that all the population is in those two cities. And Texas, Dallas, is a liberal city, whereas the rest of Texas is conservative. Now, in Texas, Texas is big enough that the population ends up being conservative, generally. But still, Dallas is a liberal enclave in Texas. And Pennsylvania is the same thing. Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, on two opposite ends of Pennsylvania, are liberal. And you have the top of Pennsylvania and the middle section, the T-bone section of Pennsylvania, so to speak, that is conservative. You see that replicated all over America.
See, I don't really care about the whole liberal, Democrat, liberal, like the whole... It's like, this is like this big conspiracy by someone. Maybe it's the liberals, maybe it's the... whoever it is, progressives, that kids cannot make money. They're like, they're... there's this nationwide conspiracy that you can't have an lemonade stand. There's like...
So you don't see this as a more generalized war on personal liberty. You see this as a conspiracy against lemonade stands.
It seems like it. Because everywhere I turn, there's another lemonade stand closed by someone with a federal or with some type of uniform.
Well, you see, when I see this, all I see is the state telling the individual that you cannot go out and try to make money for yourself. You need to have authorization to fend for yourself by the government. You need to have the government's permission to provide for yourself. That the beginning and the end are both the government.
Wasn't that how it's supposed to be, Craig?
No. No, it's not.
But they have degrees, and they know what we should be doing.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Those people are evil. Evil elites. And they want to control you. They want to rule your life. And they are using government at all levels to try to get in there. It is, you know, Adam Curry loves to talk about things like Agenda 21 and, you know, things like that. This is very much in that vein. This might not literally be an Agenda 21 initiative. Maybe it is, who knows. But it is along that same line of thinking.
I don't know, some government is good, Craig. You can't complain about, like, people making sure you're drinking water or the land you're living on is not going to kill you because there's some other crap on there that's going to...
Hold on a second. Now, don't you think that was a bit self-interested right there, that statement? Don't you think that was a little bit, you know, kind of selfish?
No.
What do you do for a living?
I can't speak about that, Craig. So that is classified information.
Well then, let me just say that you might be predisposed to thinking that government is responsible for that. And you know what? To an extent, you're right. I would never say that we should have no government. That's what douchebags like you and your liberal friends like to throw back in my face. That, you know, just because I don't want government saying to my 10-year-old little girl that she can't sell lemonade, just because I say that I don't think that's appropriate, then you come back and tell me, well, you must not be for any government at all. You're an anarchist. You're a nut job. You're crazy. No. No, that is not what I think at all. There is obviously room for a federal government, and there is room for a strong federal government, but that does not mean it cannot be limited. A limited federal government does not necessarily need to be a weak federal government. The two are not mutually exclusive. I want a limited government that knows its boundaries and knows when it is appropriate and when it is inappropriate to enter my life and to look me in the face and say, I can and cannot do this or that. And when you start to tell my kid that she cannot sell lemonade or green tea or whatever the hell it is on the sidewalk, you're going too far.
See, I don't know. There's some, like, in those cases, sure, I agree. But in other cases, we can't, like, start saying, oh, yeah, well, this regulation is bad, that regulation is bad. Then you get start going into a little slippery slope there.
Well, you know what? You know, this is a good time to bring up something I wasn't going to bring up. I wasn't going to bring this up because it's not really that important a news story, but you emailed me a story about Michelle Bachmann. You want to explain to the audience what that was about? You don't need to read it or anything, just the broad stroke of it.
She has there's open things where she's not married to anything about how changing the federal minimum wage could attract corporations back to the U.S.
That's right. And do you recall, just in broad strokes, what the comment was you attached to that?
No, but I can check.
No, I have it right here. Okay, so this is the headline. Bachmann says she'd consider minimum wage changes. And you send me this comment. Does this mean that she would lower minimum wage to appease corporations? Why would I want to vote for her? Now listen to that. Does this mean that she would lower minimum wage to appease corporations? To appease corporations. Do you view a corporation as a bad thing?
I don't see it as a bad thing, but if you're lowering minimum wage,
uh-huh,
you're going to be forcing the wage slaves that we all are to maybe try and get another job because, hey, we can lower the minimum wage so we don't have to pay that person as much as we are now.
There is the idea that the federal government shouldn't have the right to tell a business how much to pay its employees, that you should let the market decide.
Well, if you do that, Craig, then why would someone want to work for that company?
Exactly my point. They wouldn't, and that company would fail as it should. If it is not if it's not paying its employees as much as it should, it will not be competitive, and it will fail.
Of course, there's the other side of the coin. If there is no other job to get, you will take that job, and you'll just take another substandard wage job to pay for whatever you for your existence.
That's
so you'll paying two deadbeat jobs that pay like, let's say, like $5 or $3 an hour, just so you can be making the same amount as you were doing before.
Why do you say that?
Well, if you're making, let's say, $7 and seven and a quarter or whatever it is, I think if that's what's the federal minimum wage is.
Yep.
Let's say they were to drop it down to say like $3.
All right.
Or $3-$4. Well, to the cost of living is not going to drop. So to have the same wage that you had before, aka the $7.25. You would have to pay at least do two jobs, and if some people are already working two jobs, so what is it, $3-$4?
Wait a second. That's absolutely not true. Do you know, $7.25 is, I believe, the federal minimum wage. But if you get a job, a minimum wage job in Pennsylvania, You will not be. You will not be making $7.25.
That's what I was making when I was working.
That's because back then it was $7.25. You will be making $8.10, because Pennsylvania has a different minimum wage than the federal government. It has a higher minimum wage. States have the right to have whatever minimum wage they choose. It's just that the federal government minimum wage is a benchmark. You cannot be below that, but you can be above it. So many states, if not most states in the country, have a minimum wage currently that is above the federal minimum wage. For instance, Pennsylvania's is about, what would that be? Maybe 85 cents above what is necessary. I'm sure California is similar, Massachusetts, and even more conservative states like Texas and Florida. Most states will have equal to or greater than federal minimum wage. All states have some form of minimum wage. I do not believe that government should have no minimum wage, no price protection, no wage protection, excuse me, for its employees. It should have some. But is that a state issue or is that a federal issue? For me, I believe it should be left up to the state government. That's why America is a federation of states. It's our system of government. And if the federal government has the power to dictate how much somebody makes, then it has almost unlimited power. And that is scary. That is my whole point. If the federal minimum wage was reduced to nothing, you would still get a job in Pennsylvania and get $8.10 an hour, because that is the Pennsylvania state minimum wage. New Jersey would be a little bit different. New York would be a little bit different. Ohio would be a little bit different. But they all have some form of minimum wage.
Okay, this was a non-issue. At least this article by the AP.
Well, the way they presented it, yes, it would be a non-issue. Because they never addressed the fact that all states have a state minimum wage. They don't address that. So yes, that itself is a non-issue, but the broader political point that they raise is not. Because that's a perennial point that it keeps being raised time and again. It has been ever since the minimum wage was instituted at the early part of the 20th century. All right, so do you have anything else to add about that?
Nope.
All right, then. So, I think it is time for us to end this show. So if you have any thoughts, any suggestions, if you agree with us, disagree with us, please let us know. We would love to hear your feedback. So please email us at feedback@justgettingbypodcast.com. That is feedback@justgettingbypodcast.com. And if you liked this show, if you like any shows on the stream, if you like No Agenda itself, please, please donate to John and Adam. They need your support. Go to Dvorak.org/NA or NoAgendaNation.com to donate. All right, so we will talk to you on Friday. See you, Chemslave.
Sayonara.